Sweet Soul Music on Saturday morning. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. I said that already. I said it two times now. January 4th? Yes. Whew. We're one eighth through the month already? One seventh, one eighth? We're 1/7.5th. And what a great song, huh? From, I don't even know what year that's from. It's, 60-something, 65 is my guess. And here's the thing. There's a line in that song, and I don't know who, I'm going to look it up next break. I love the Herbie Ding Dong. That's, can't beat that. That's a lyric, Mr. Man, I tell you what, on Saturday morning. So it's, you know, my wife was discussing the weather with me last night that it's been surprisingly warm. In years gone by, we've had some pretty Arctic conditions by this point. We really haven't seen that yet. I think we're in turning into being a regular, typical winter in Maine, which is it gets a little cold, then we get rain. We get a little bit of snow, maybe, you know, but it's interesting. Leave it at that. Speaking of my wife, we will be watching TV at night, watch the news or whatever. And she comes, if I'm having something to drink, invariably she says something that just cracks me up to the point where, and she always does it when I have something, I'm having a drink of something and, you know, to the point where it will come out my nose if I'm not careful. And she, I wasn't drinking last night, but she came out with one. And I never remember them because usually they happen earlier in the week. And by the time Friday, Saturday gets around, I can't remember anything. But last night she laid one on me. Now, my wife is probably, she's more than half Irish. And her grandparents on her mother's side came from Ireland. So she's pretty Irish. And she says to me, now I'm half Italian and half Hungarian, okay? She says, you don't have any color in your cheeks. your cheeks don't get red. She says, you're kind of swarthy. Well, yeah, you know, I'm kind of like Italian. I could have made a lot of jokes and I didn't, but she will blush. I can accomplish that very easily. But so of course I'm getting ready to go to bed last night. I'm looking in the mirror now. You know, if I slap my cheeks, will I get some color? But my nose is red. I'm not sure what that means. And I wasn't drinking anything that would make my nose red. So don't go down that road. It's Saturday morning. Be polite. But it was interesting conversations. I tell her every time she comes out with something that just cracks me up, I got to write this down for Saturday morning. And, of course, I never do. But so it goes. The big CES, Consumer Electronics Show, is in Las Vegas, I think, this week. And there's a lot of stuff that's going to be there. A lot of it is stupid stuff like talking frying pans and you know, inane things that just make no – round cell phones. Well, yeah, that's handy. Let's hold a round cell phone. That's going to be real easy to hold. But there were a couple things that caught my interest and I'm going to look into. One is a clothes dryer that's sits on a tabletop. You don't do big loads of laundry in it, but it's called a vacuum dryer. And it doesn't use heat to dry clothes. So for clothes that are susceptible to shrinkage, it's called a Morus, M-O-R-U-S, Zero. So I've got to look into that. That sounds interesting. And then there is a bicycle / type electric vehicle called a Wello. It only do 25 miles an hour, but it's enclosed, so you're out of the weather, and it's kind of like it's a one person vehicle. And at some point, I suspect some of these will catch on, the way bicycles do, just because you know it's. Be nice to be out of the weather if in fact the weather is an issue. So I've got to look into that one too. It's very narrow, but it's got three wheels, two in the front, one in the rear. So it's reasonably stable. The catch with most three-wheel vehicles I found, because I've had some, is two wheels in the front, one in the back, very stable. But if there's a pothole in the road, you can't ride over it. If you ride over it, you know, straddle it with the two front wheels, the rear wheel is going to catch it, and it's going to be a big ka-chung. You have to kind of go around it completely, which maybe is okay. I don't know. Or maybe we should just not have potholes. That could be. There's a concept. Let's see. What else we got? The former head of Nissan Motors, Carlos Ghosn is his name, was under house arrest in Japan because Nissan being a Japanese company, they said he did something with money. I don't know if he did or didn't, but he was under house arrest. And he fled Japan. He was under surveillance, fled Japan, supposedly by being snuck out in a musical instrument case and then flown to Lebanon, where I think he's got passports for different countries. So he's in Lebanon, apparently, where he can't be extradited back to Japan. I don't know if the guy's guilty or not. I know Japanese laws tend to be a little bit more stringent than other countries. Maybe that's good. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I've been following that closely. I just think it's pretty cool. The guy snuck out in a musical instrument case. Now, you know, you kind of wonder, well, it wasn't a banjo case. It wasn't a mandolin. It wasn't a good, had to be like a bass. If you're being surveilled, at what point is okay? The bass case is coming out of the house and nobody checks it. How does that work? I don't know. I do know this. I do know we got to take a break. It's 8:15, and it means we pay some bills. We come back. We talk some more. The phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got a text line. It is up and running. Took me a while this morning. I figured it out, though. It's 601-207-4478. It is hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. First show of the new decade. Oh, that's like an auspicious thing. It's maybe it's a suspicious thing. That's what it is. It's Saturday morning. Don't go anywhere. Okay, we're back. It's 8:19 here. Coming through the ozone to you directly on the radio through the modern electronics that we call FM. It's hot and cold on the Voice of Maine Radio Network. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text 601-207-4478. Commander Cody, the Lost Planet Airman. We don't hear enough of Commander Cody anymore, do we? No, we don't. Well, let's see. What else we got? I think it was in September or October. I got for our shop, I needed a lift. I mean, I'm doing car work. I need a lift. But the building we're in is not really that big, and I've got radiant heat in the floor, and a regular two-post lift wasn't quite what I wanted to do. So I wound up spending a little more money and getting a portable lift. It's called a single post lift, and you can wheel it around. It's like a pallet jack, but it'll lift up cars. And it, to me, doesn't seem quite as stable, didn't seem quite as stable as a two post lift. You know, you're getting the car from either side. This is from one side and goes underneath the car. It limits some of the things you can do underneath the car, but I mainly deal with little cars, Priuses. So I've been working my comfort level up here in spending time underneath cars on this lift. And I've overcome my fear of death. Not to the degree that I'm going to do something stupid. I'm very diligent. There's times I'm probably not the most diligent person in the world. But when it comes to putting a car up in the air 6 feet, I'm very diligent. I'm also very diligent when it comes to rebuilding hybrid batteries, dealing with batteries in general, or dealing with electricity. You figure this out. Sometimes with shocks, sometimes with sparks. I don't want to test that whole concept with cars in the air. So what I do is, spend a fair bit of time making sure I've got good jack points, and then lift it up, check it, get underneath it after I'm comfortable. So I'm to the point where I'm getting pretty good at this. And if you're doing a Prius all the time, you know where everything is, and I just have it set up, and it's pretty easy. And it is extremely convenient having a movable lift, so it doesn't block the floor. We can get a lot of cars in the shop if we need to. So yesterday I had a Prius on the lift, excuse me, and I removed the catalytic converter. And then I moved the car out of the shop. And I knew it was going to be loud. And that Prius is not a big car, but man, it was loud. It's not something I do every day, removing exhaust systems from cars. I usually have somebody else do exhaust work for me. I don't feel the desire, but yesterday was one of those times. And I said, it's no big deal. And it was. It was easy to take it, get it apart. But then I moved it out of the shop, and I'm like, wow. Car engines are noisy without muffler systems. So that was my great lesson for the day. Everybody was wondering what was going on. Speaking of car things, I've been rebuilding batteries for folks. And some cars, the battery goes, the light comes on, car comes right in, and we fix it as one or two cells. Some cars I get have sat around for a while. And I mean like 6 months, a year, whatever. And as I do more and more and more of these, I'm starting to notice patterns as to where the battery, the cells, there's 28 cells in a Prius pack. And I'm seeing patterns where the cells fail, which I find fascinating. I can't attribute any distinct physics to what's happening yet, but I had one come in this week, and I've seen this with cars that have sat for a while. There's 28 cells. There'd be like six or seven at one end, just all together, that go bad. And it seems like they work their way up from the end in. And I have no explanation for that. I just find it fascinating. And I've got to charge more for those. I haven't, but I've got to start because I'm replacing a quarter of the pack. I just did one that was one quarter of the whole battery pack. That gets kind of expensive in terms of parts. So I go through a lot of cells in the process. So, but it's been interesting. I have no great conclusion other than this. If you have a electric car or you have a hybrid automobile, it doesn't matter who makes it, you need to run the car. Batteries need to be cycled, charge, discharge, charge, discharge. They just work better. They last longer if they are cycled regularly. And if you haven't already left for the winter and you have a hybrid car, it would make sense to leave it with someone if you can. If you can't, ideally store it indoors and disconnect the 12-volt battery and hope for the best for when you come back. Usually they're okay. I have a feeling that if they're parked outdoors for some reason, a little more susceptible to a problem. Again, that's a theory that I'm working on, a theorem, as we might say. So our phone number is 1-800-966. Our text 601-207-4478. Dave in Prospect wants me to play the comedy cut my daughter's boyfriend made for me. Well, I tell you, Dave, I'm not sure I should anymore because some people heard that and thought I was losing my mind, which is kind of happening anyway. But I gave a disclaimer at the beginning of that. It was, 5-6 minutes long? And I spoke at the end of it. And lo and behold, somebody tunes in the middle and must have turned off the radio. I've heard it from a couple people. What's wrong with Tom? Well, there's a lot wrong with Tom, but that cut wasn't one of them. I've got to check with John. I asked him to put it up on the podcast site. I don't know if it is or not, but I will double check and see if it is. That way you can listen to it all you want, and I don't have to explain to the listening audience that I still have a few brain cells left functioning. We do have a phone call. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. How are you?
You know, you're absolutely right. You run the car every day, you'll have it forever, and you'll never have to change an exhaust. I used to have multiple cars that, and I'll tell you, it's not good for them. They need to be started and run every day.
Yeah. Well, I have multiple cars. I have like 20 to 30 cars at any given time. And that's right. If I ignore something, all kinds of hilarity ensues. And it gets expensive. Well, it gets relatively expensive for me, and it certainly is expensive in time because I have to fix whatever acts up. And, of course, for those of you who don't know this, you don't leave your car parked on the lawn. Park it on pavement or at least gravel, but not on grass, because all that moisture that comes out of the lawn or growing things, maybe it isn't a lawn, it's a field, it's going to rust the living daylights out of your car. So in case you didn't know that, you're going to see it if you've done this. So phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text is 601-207-4478. New Year's Day, I have a friend I went to college with who I hadn't spoken to in a couple of years. And he never really sends a note. He doesn't call me. Why doesn't he call me? I said, well, I'm not going to be stupid. I'll call him. So I call him up. And we probably spoke for close to 2 hours. It's just like we left off, just hung, maybe we talked 2 days ago, but it was a couple hours catching up. And my friend and his wife are both retired. And he's been retired for a couple of years. He worked for AT&T and down in New Jersey is where he lives. And he's telling me about all the cruises they're taking. he worked at AT&T his entire professional life since he was out of college, pretty much. His wife was a graphic artist, did website stuff, and they were gainfully employed and I'm sure made decent money. And he was a incredible mechanic, meticulous, would not even begin to explain the way he treated his automobiles. If anybody ever has the luxury of buying a car from this guy, they are buying something well beyond the cream puff. Anyway, after we were chatting, got off the phone. We were both on speakerphones on both ends, so husbands and wives could speak. His wife and my wife had gone to high school together, and he and I went to college together. And we got off the phone and realized the other thing they had going for them in having all this discretionary income is they didn't have any kids, and they lived in the same house. we house jumped more than we should have, but we kind of like old houses for some sick reason. And they lived in the same house, I think, pretty much their entire married life. But, and I think I actually told this story several months ago. I Googled him to see if everything, if I found anything on Google, which I didn't. But I found the tax records for the town he lives in. And of course, I have to look up his property taxes. 100-by-100 lot, 2,300 square foot house, ranch, I think a raised ranch type house, New Jersey, in a development where there's lots of these houses. I mean, this is population density suburbia USA. Property taxes, $18,500 a year. Okay. Where do you get the $1,500 a month to pay property taxes and still? Teach his own. They like it down there, and I bless them for that. I'm glad somebody's there. I'm glad someone's there, and it ain't me. We got to take a break. It's 8:31. It's hot and cold. We'll be right back. Yeah, I couldn't talk over that. That was just too nice. A group called Lost and Found, and you may recognize the tune if you've been around a while. It's called Goofus. That could be my theme song. It's a hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. A text line 601-207-4478. I do want to mention quickly my friend Alan at General Appliance and Brewer on Center Street, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, that number to call is 989-4341, 989-4341, to talk to Alan and get your home appliance problem solved. Speaking of which, I do have some information on the tabletop clothes dryer, but I have a phone call here, so we're going to do the phone call, then we'll do the clothes dryer. How's that for a plan? Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom.
Hey.
Dave and Bradley.
Hey.
A question on solar systems. I've got a few extra panels, and we're going to think of setting something up for my son. Mm-hmm. And I know this would be for solar hot water.
Okay.
I know you prefer the drain back system. Mine here is pressurized. It goes into a solar tank with the heat exchanger in it.
Mm-hmm.
So the way mine is, I pump the heated water from the solar panels into a heat exchanger, which heats that 80 gallons of water, and then it draws out of that into the next phase of heating.
Sure.
So I haven't looked online at yours. I'm sorry, I meant to. But my question is, if you run the water from the solar collection through the heat exchanger, is more efficient than running the water into the bulk of the thing and then running a heat exchanger to extract the heat from the tank?
Let's backtrack a little bit here. First of all, I haven't been doing drain back systems in a while. I think the efficiency is probably about the same either way, because a heat exchanger throws into the equation a little bit of a loss of efficiency, and I'm going to say that number's maybe 10%, but it's not lost. I mean, the energy doesn't go anywhere. It just takes a little bit longer to put the heat into the tank if you're on if you have an antifreeze system and you're putting heat into a tank like you have. The pump runs 10% longer maybe. And on the other side, if you're using a tank like we make, using a heat exchanger to take it out, maybe you run a little bit longer, or you just have a slightly lower flow to try to keep up with the performance, to give you performance you want. But the energy is still going to be there. excuse me. I guess if I was to say there was a loss of efficiency, it's more apt to be in a system like you have, where it may re-radiate out of the collector if the system runs a little bit hotter. But I think it's a very, very minor number. So what I do, and we're not making our systems right now, our solar systems, but our collectors are serpentine. It's just a serpentine loop of 3/8 diameter copper tubing in the collector. That will not drain back. There's no way it's going to drain back. So we use antifreeze. But I'm working with do-it-yourselfers, and doing a pressurized antifreeze system, quite honestly, I find to be a pain in the butt. I would use a stronger word, but I'm on the radio. Looking at this, I said, okay, we're going to do a serpentine absorber. It keeps the cost down. The efficiency is very similar to a standard collector. We've done a lot of things in the collector to keep it up, keep the efficiency higher. But how do we make the rest of the system simpler? So I borrowed from what other companies had done, which was an unpressurized antifreeze system. And what we ultimately wound up doing is doing a system like a pressurized antifreeze system, but we have a reservoir that we fill with antifreeze. At the bottom of that reservoir is a circulator pump that runs the system that pumps up to the collectors. So when we start the system up first time ever, we take the cover off the reservoir, we pour antifreeze in, turn the pump on, and let the pump push all the air out till the whole system is filled with antifreeze, and the reservoir is big enough to hold some capacity and have a little expansion area. Once we're happy the system is de-aerated, we can just top it off with some antifreeze, leave an airspace, put the cap on, seal it, and the system's done. No expansion tank. No charging assembly, no air removal device. All that happens by the sake of this reservoir that we have that is accessible. So if you want to change the antifreeze, you take the cover off and you can, you empty the thing out, you can flush the system. You could add antifreeze just by taking the cover off and pouring antifreeze in. And I have this, so I've done that for years. It's worked well. We use and I think you and I had communicated about 12-volt pumps. I use a 12-volt circulator pump for it. when I set up my shop last year, last winter, end of last winter, I did a similar system for the heating system. So when we got a boiler, there's a reservoir, and then the radiant floor, and the reservoir is that access point. We're using a regular 110-volt pump in this case, feeding off the bottom of the reservoir. I just pour antifreeze in and purge all the loops, which took a while. And again, the same deal. If I need to service the system, I don't have to unpressurize it. I can drain it easily. The reservoir holds maybe a gallon. Doesn't even hold a gallon of fluid because it's all in the system. I just have enough so you know, there's room for expansion. And if it's cold, it can contract and it'll still run. There'll be enough antifreeze in there. And it's a very simple system, and it eliminates a lot of nonsense and a lot of aggravation for professional installers or for somebody who's just a do-it-yourself or who doesn't want to know about charging assemblies and charging pumps and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to explain over the radio. I think I'm making sense.
No, I understand what you're saying. I have a little pump, so I can work under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the simplicity of what you're doing.
Well, this reservoir is a cheap date.
Does the reservoir have to be at the high spot?
No. No.
How do you keep the water from draining back into the system?
You could put a check valve on it. It hasn't been much of an issue. The system doesn't hold a lot of fluid. So it doesn't tend to drain back that much because with the cap on it, it's kind of a sealed system.
Okay.
So
you got the pump running when you're charging it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I had a lady who had a solar system that was put together. There was a company, I can't remember the name now. I just completely blanked out it. A company down in Massachusetts made a lot of collectors back in the 80s. excuse me, they were good collectors, but to make the installation of their system fast, they used rubber hoses with hose clamps in between the collectors. And that worked okay for a while. As time goes on, the rubber hoses tend to leak a little bit. Air can get into the system. This is a pressurized antifreeze system. So there was a few people I've dealt with who have had this system. They will not hold pressure. They'll leak out enough antifreeze that then the pump won't pump. Everything cavitates. The antifreeze cooks in the collectors because there's still antifreeze in the collectors. So by introducing this unpressurized reservoir, we can not have to take the whole system apart and solder everything together. We can use the hoses, which are not visibly leaking. And in that case, we make a bigger reservoir just to make sure we have enough capacity, because usually that reservoir is below the collectors, and these collectors have more capacity. They hold more fluid. And it works well. It's a cheap fix compared to taking the whole system down and reconnecting, because the hoses will hold against the pump pressure, but they won't hold like 20 PSI. So they don't leak. And if they did leak, you can just you can top it off, or you can tighten up the hoses or replace the hoses or go. But I haven't seen that as an issue, as we've done these over the years, and I've done a number of them. And I can't remember the name of the company for the life of me. They were down.
Well, I must have those collectors, because that's how mine hooked together.
Okay.
I went and got radiator hose, or, you know, heater hose,
yep,
whatever. And I haven't had leaks with them, fortunately. I mean, I did once, but it's minimal, and I keep the pressure down around 20.
And yours are relatively new. I mean, we're talking like after 15, 20 years, these hoses tend to lose a little bit of seal. I think they were silicone.
Yeah.
Those were silicone hoses, but, you know, anything with age just tends to, you know, maybe it's weathering on the outside. Maybe, you know, it just shrunk a little bit. Maybe the heat got to it, the antifreeze. I mean, you know, 20 years of exposure to antifreeze is apt to have an impact on any material, not just that.
Well, you're not using regular car antifreeze. You're using the non-toxic.
Yeah, the propylene glycol antifreeze is still, they're very similar materials. They're slightly, one's toxic, one isn't, but they're chemically, their characteristics are quite similar.
But they are somewhat corrosive, you figure?
Well, not out of the bottle, they're not, but if they sit there, if let's say those hoses leak, and the system kind of loses its prime where it can't circulate. If there's antifreeze sitting in the collector, it's going to cook and turn acidic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, understood that.
And at that point, you've got to flush the system. At very least, flush the system when it's warm out, flush it with water, pressure test it to make sure.
So why can't you put a little sodium hydroxide in there and bring it back to neutral and just keep going?
Because chemically it's an acid now. It's not an antifreeze anymore. So it loses its freeze point as well as gets acidic.
Oh,
so it's going to, you know, and it's not that expensive that.
So one way to check that is if you still have your freeze point, then it hasn't. I thought it was just a degeneration of the glycol that caused the acid, but you're saying it's gone from glycol to acidic. I understand.
Yeah, and really, when you do test, and you know, for the first several years, it's not a big deal. But as the system ages, you want to check for you want to check the pH and the freeze point.
Understood. Okay. Yeah. Mine seems to be okay that way.
Good.
So on my boiler, I have a little antifreeze in there, and I did check the pH, and it was a little low. It seems like any boiler treatments that I use are somewhat alkaline.
Yep.
Okay.
And they should be.
So back to my original question. Is it better to run your panels through the heat exchanger into the reservoir or the other way around, or it doesn't make any difference?
I don't think it makes a big difference.
Okay. Just whichever is more. I'm moving my Prius. That's that beast.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay,
all right.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
I like your reservoir idea. I suppose you have those to sell, huh?
I don't. I make them. I custom make them, I have one. I put in my heating system in the autumn, and I've been messing with it. That one introduces unique character. That's a water-based system. It's not antifreeze, but I did it just to make, instead of having to have a whole bunch of stuff going into our tank, I can have it outside the tank and have all these taps going on, and it's a little bit different concept, which probably we ought to do a YouTube video on because it is very unique. And these devices are also called hydraulic separators, depending on how you're using them. A general hydraulic separator that you would buy, if you Google it, you're going to find these big, heavy brass or steel things that are hundreds of dollars. We're making it out of ABS plastic, and it's stupid cheap. I mean, you know, it's probably $50-$60. And we can put in as many taps as we want because it's plastic. We just drill it and tap it and put fittings in.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a cool way to do a lot of stuff and have a lot of access points. So if you wanted to have that antifreeze loop, if that was in your loop, you could tap it to another tank if you wanted to, or go directly to a fan coil right off the collectors if the tank got too hot on you without having to tie into the tank directly. Anyway, I got to let you go, Dave. We're almost out of time.
Well, look, just one other question. Do you have replacement rocker panels for Priuses? Mine seem to be going bad.
I do, but you can get them online as well, just as, for the same price I can.
Yeah.
And they're about $100 for two.
Oh, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, for those of you with Priuses out there, I want to say Rock Auto's got them. I know that you can find them online. They're for sale usually on eBay as well, $100-$110 for two of them. And they're good quality. I have a couple of sets that I'm using, but you can get them. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. Let's see. We can squeeze in some of these texts here, I think. Maybe not. Let's see. Could you discuss the possibilities or lack thereof for heating a 180-square-foot greenhouse? I remember you mentioning a university study on greenhouse heating done a while ago, the name of which resides with copious other vital bits of information I can't quite lay my hands on at the moment. but I don't have enough time right now to do that one, so we'll save that one for after the break. This is even a longer email, so we won't go there. We could just play music, couldn't we? Let's see. And, the person who asked the greenhouse question, You know, they have a scrolling thing here. Oh, it's my friend Mr. Nangle down in Lemoyne. Dick, have I got a treat for you? Are you ready? Last time you texted me was about Dave Van Ronk, and you must have been picking up the vibrations today, Mr. Man, because here he is, Dave Van Ronk. We'll be back in a bit. Okay, we're back. It's 9:07. It's hot and cold. Saturday morning, hour number two. Numero dos. Let's see. Roger Miller, you knew that. So I got a couple of text messages here. One is thanking me for playing Dave Van Ronk. And the other one was whoever was doing that singing, please no more, sounds like beside me he was hurting himself. Well, it's Dave Van Ronk. I mean, that's what he does, man. He was the mayor of Greenwich Village. So he had, this is back in the 60s, he had Bob Dylan steal stuff from him. Okay, so he sings regular too. So just relax, Tom. It's okay. It really is. A couple things here. Let's get some housekeeping out of the way. First is I mentioned this tabletop countertop tumble dryer called Morus, M-O-R-U-S zero. I'm not sure it's available yet, or I think it may be available now. I came across it at the CES conference. Actually, I think they introduced it last year, but it's also there again this year, I think, as an available thing, a real thing now. Retail price was $549. I have a feeling it's less than that. And it's the first vacuum tumble dryer, and what it does is it evaporates water by vacuum dehydration and says it can dry clothes in 15 minutes. I assume that's a single item. This is not a big thing. It looks to me like it, maybe a foot and a half in diameter. It's not very big. So you find that the device doesn't do all that much. And over to our text messages, we had a number of them here. Let me just start at the beginning. I'm not where I should be here. It's okay. I'll figure it out. So we were doing the greenhouse one first. Greenhouse study on greenhouse heating was done a while ago. That was at Rutgers University. They did a lot of work on solar heated greenhouses. And there's more and more of that happening here in the state of Maine, just because obviously it makes sense if we can have crops growing this time of year. It's a benefit. Generally speaking, for a small greenhouse, the south-facing surface should be glazed, double glazed. North-facing surface would not be glazed. It would be insulated well. and the gable ends maybe not glazed as much, but everything at least double glazed. You can get glazing for greenhouses that is maybe five layers, but it cuts the amount of sunlight that comes in. So a little bit of a trade-off there. A lot of mass in a greenhouse is an advantage in the sense that it allows the greenhouse to store heat because it'll tend to overheat on sunny days. So if you can store heat, especially this time of year when the sun is out, your heating costs drop down a lot. I couldn't tell you the university anymore because it was a few years ago now. We made water tanks that were the height of greenhouse benches. And the idea was that they were going to fill the tanks with water, solar heat them, and use that latent heat directly under the beds to keep the beds from plants from freezing, have little covers that would go over the bed at nighttime to keep the plants warm. So the greenhouse might drop below, a good temperature for plants. But they were protected, and they had that heat source, which was fairly substantial. And again, would lose heat rather slowly. And I never heard back from the folks we did them for, but we did a couple. They were pretty big tanks for the greenhouse. I've got it on file somewhere. I was just looking for it the other day. I couldn't put my hands on it. But let's see. Then we had another question here about have you heard of desulfating battery chargers? Saying it was good to me. I am desulfating my first battery that was dead to normal charging, sitting in a vehicle for 18 months, not used, 1.2 open cell voltage when I started. Battery's now at 13.4 after 4 days. Initially, the charger rated the battery as defective for low voltage. It would not begin recovering until I paralleled a good battery to it. Once desulfating started, I disconnected the good battery and the recovery process continued. Yes, I have a commercial desulfation charger that was a lot of money. I actually got it for a TV show we did on it years ago. I use it almost every day because a lot of folks will leave a lot of folks, me included, will have a car that sat for a while and the 12 volt goes flat and I can bring it back because it's just sulfated from sitting. Usually, the charger that I have, it takes a couple days to desulfate the battery and get it back up to where it will take a normal charge. So it has two settings. One is desulfate, which will clear off the sulfation on the pack, and then the then it's a desulfation charge, similar to what you're doing. But I can, you know, so if I start out with a battery that's at 1 volt or 6 volts or whatever, that's a 12-volt battery. I can desulfate it, get up to about 10 volts where it will then accept the charge, you know, from a 12-volt charger. And usually I'll use the desulfation charger, and then I swap back and forth with a regular charger because sometimes the battery's pulling more current than my desulfation charger will be happy with, and it'll trip the breaker on the charger. So I do the stance with battery chargers, but they work very well. And I've had batteries that have been, like yours, have been kicking around for a while, and they'll come back. I would say I have about 80% success rate on car batteries. So let's see. So that takes care of that. We got a phone call here. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. I was wondering, is it possible to do a baseboard heating system in a home with a heat pump water heater, like as kind of like a closed loop system? That makes sense?
The short answer is yes. The long answer is you only get about 6,000 or 7,000 BTUs at the most out of the heat pump water heater. And if you have it in a basement, it's going to chill the basement down to the degree that probably even that 6,000 BTUs will not work for you.
Would a separate heating system put in the basement to keep it at a base temperature be redundant?
If you have a wood stove down there that you're using anyway and it's scavenging heat off that, not really. It gets a little bit, I'm not sure that's the ideal way to set it up.
That's what I was kind of wondering, is if there was an efficient way to subsidize the heat in the room that the heat pump would be in efficiently without, you know, essentially double dipping on cost.
It's kind of, well, the issue is this. You put it in the base, it's normally going to be in a basement. And so now you're chilling the basement, and you're going to be starting to pull heat off the first floor as it gets colder. Heat's going from hot to cold. The basement's nice and cold at this point. The floor up above, the ceiling, is comparatively warm. That's going to be chilled, so you're going to start pulling heat off of that first floor area, the area you're trying to heat, so you get kind of a vicious cycle going there. It's not the most it's not the most efficient way to do it, to answer your question.
Okay.
So, sorry.
Okay,
thanks. They do make heat pumps that are similar to heat pump water heaters that go outdoors and will create, you can heat antifreeze and heat a radiant convector or a radiant panel. One place you can look at, I have some friends who have brought some in, which we're getting out of because we have too many other things going on, and you can look that up. on heatingstuffllc.com. There are some there. But we got to take a break. It is 9:16 here at the Voice of Maine. The phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text is 601-207-4478. We'll be right back. Yeah, we're back. It's 9:21 here at the Voice of Maine. And I was just looking up a little bit more about this countertop clothes dryer. And the going price is not $599. It's $299 to $329. So that makes it a little bit easier to makes it a little more palatable, and I guess it is available now. What I was looking at, it actually was introduced a year ago, and it is at the CES again this year, though. It was an award winner last year. The and it apparently has a UV thing in there to kill bacteria as well. Just takes care of everything. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Well, morning, Tom.
Hey, how are you, Tom?
Okay. Hey, not that it concerns me that much because I don't own a computer, but I deal with a lot of vendors that have computers, and there's a lot of operating systems out there. Do you know anything about this impending disaster possibility that's coming up in about 10 days if you don't switch over or update or whatever is it that they call?
No.
It was brought up on the air yesterday morning with Rick and George, and they weren't sure if the station had updated, and if you're not updated, you're not going to be able to use the service anymore. There's some kind of big changeover going on.
I heard snippets of that. I was in the car, I wasn't quite clear what they were talking about. They were talking about a few different things.
Yeah.
I'm not. My oldest son is a IT guy. I'll have to ask him. It may be a PC related thing. I don't know.
Yeah, there's something. If you don't get it done by a certain date, then you're just not going to be able to. You know, service isn't going to be available unless you've already made the update on it. So. Yeah, I'd like to make sure that the station keeps going so we, all of us listeners, can continue to listen, because everything's computer controlled nowadays, as you obviously know, sitting there at the board and everything else there. But,
yeah.
Okay.
It's well, a new one on me.
If you'd heard anything about it, and you know, maybe somebody can call in with a little bit of information, maybe somebody from one of the advertisers, MTG.
Yeah, somebody just texted in, Tom. He says he's talking about Windows. So this is for PCs, which, of course, the whole station is run on Windows. I personally only use Windows. The only machine I have that runs Windows is a computer I use with the dealer software on it, you know, for Priuses,
right.
For Toyotas. But I don't use that for anything. I don't get on the web with it. I don't do email with it. I just have it black box. I plug it into cars and I unplug it and put it back on the charger.
Right.
But
I'll
see if I can find out what the particulars are. I'm sure somebody out there was paying attention and knew what it was. I've not heard of this though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard it's going to be pretty widespread. So hey, we're still waiting on Pete. So get him on the air.
I'm working on it. Thanks. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye.
The I remember Y2K, how that was going to be a real big thing, and I was thinking about that because my IT son got hired to help get Y2K things sorted out, and you wonder in hindsight how much of that was how stupid was it that when it goes from 1999 to 2000 that computers weren't going to work. I mean, how myopic are you in terms of not paying attention that, you know, is everything that everybody did to prevent that really work? Or did people who didn't do anything, did their computers crash? I never heard of anybody losing anything or any data, and I assume that would have happened. Anyway, let's go back to the phones at 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
What Tom was talking about Microsoft is no longer going to be supporting updates for Windows 7. So Microsoft is just pushing everybody to update to Microsoft 10 from Windows 7. So nothing's going to blow up for Tom up in Sangerville. It's just that Microsoft is not going to support 7 anymore. So, you know, over the next few months, people are going to be switching over to 10 from 7.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Okay.
No big blow up, Tom. You're going to be all right up there in Sangerville.
He's going to be all right because he didn't have a computer anyway.
You're right.
Okay.
Hey, have a great
Thank
weekend,
you.
Tom.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, I've got Windows 7 on that little black box I use, but I don't worry. I'm not updating anything. I'm not changing anything on it. It just is like, it's kind of like a scan tool. It just happens to have a big screen and a keyboard. And, but yeah, I mean, that happens. Apple has done similar things. They dead end. They usually run a little bit longer, but Windows 7's been around for a while. So it's not like Windows 10 is any great expense to upgrade to, other than you might have to replace a computer, but PCs generally are pretty inexpensive anyway. So it's not, that's why I had heard that, so I'd seen it somewhere about Windows 7. That really wasn't on my radar screen because I don't deal with it. Let's see. We got time. Here we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, Tom. I was calling to get some information if I could. I'm considering putting in a wood gasification boiler with like 1,000 gallons of storage, water storage.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was going back and forth. I was wondering about the pellet boilers, what your opinion was, whether wood or pellets.
Mm. Good.
And if I went with a pellet boiler, would I need the 1,000 gallons of storage, or can that run without the...
Yeah, good question. You don't need 1,000 gallons of storage with a pellet boiler. You usually need a buffer tank, and they have found this with the with pellet boilers in general, because otherwise they'll short cycle and kick on and off and on and off, and in the process they get a little smudgy, a little dirty, a little more a little more MS. Because on any heating device, if you're cycling it on and off a lot, you've got that, even if it's a minuscule amount of time where it's in a warm-up phase and in a shutdown phase, there's a loss of some efficiency there, and that tends to be a little bit dirtier combustion. So the storage tank mitigates a lot of that. But I think with most pellet boilers, and we actually did work with a pellet boiler company. They were doing 200 gallons of storage as a buffer. So it wasn't a huge storage. The difference, of course, is the cost of fuel. Firewood for a gasification stick wood boiler, you can harvest yourself for quote-unquote free. Obviously, your labor and sweat equity is worth something. And if you're paying for it, you're going to obviously pay more money. You're going to pay money where you might just be putting gas in a chainsaw otherwise. The luxury of pellets is that they're easy to handle. You can have bulk storage that might be a one-time fill for the year. It takes up real estate in wherever the boiler happens to be. But pellets burn clean. They are made here in the state of Maine, which is a plus. But I would say probably at least 50. I haven't run the numbers lately. 50% to maybe 2 times the cost. More than stick wood if you were buying either product. The commodity of pellets, they're always going to be dry. As long as they don't get moisture in them, they're going to be fine to have stored on site. Somebody was asking me the other day about a shop, heating a shop, and I said, you know, the real quick and easy way is to pick up a pellet stove, either new or used, poke a hole in the wall, direct vent it, and you're in business. And it was a garage, so I said, well, you can make it sealed combustion by bringing inlet air from outside. It's easy to do, and it is a DIY installation. And in a garage, you're just turning the thing on and off as you need it. But you can throw a lot of energy into space very quickly. I got to take a break here. It is it's already 9:30. We got some more texts have come in, and we'll be back in a bit. Stay with us. Okay, I'll tell you who's to blame. 9:37 on Saturday morning. If I was to have my 19th nervous breakdown, it'd be this guy right here. It's Pete. Good morning, Pete.
Buongiorno.
How's it going?
Oh, not bad. How you doing?
I'm okay. It's Saturday morning, and we're having the big radio dance party. So
what's going on there? How come every time I call, it's a commercial or music plant?
That's what I do. We got to pay the bills, Pete.
Yeah.
So, what do you got to tell me today? That's important. I get text messages about Pete.
Yeah.
So lay it on us. We've been waiting for this big moment in radio history.
I got nothing today.
Okay.
I really don't. I went to the dentist yesterday.
Yeah, they're gonna pull them.
No, I need a couple of fillings, but that's it. Nothing's bothering me. I don't want people thinking that I went to the dentist because like I've got a problem.
I
take care of my teeth. I just went because I hadn't been in a little while.
You're a good flosser, I've heard.
Cleaning. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I do like going because I always get applauded on high for my flossing. They're like, oh, I can tell.
You've always been known for as being a good flosser. I
take good care of my teeth.
Yeah.
My teeth and my cars.
That's true. If you take... Well, okay. So
I went to, you know where I went? I went to Northeast Dental Associates in Brewer.
Okay.
Partners. Something like that. They're very good and they're accepting new patients. I saw the sign.
Okay.
So
you were a new patient.
Right,
got right in.
I'm a new patient. Yeah.
Okay.
I lost them all sorts of money.
Now, let me ask you a question because you're not that old, but are the doctors your age or are they much older than you?
They're definitely younger than me.
I knew it.
The doctor was probably about my age. He was in the ballpark of my age.
Okay. So. All right. Yeah, just wait till you get to be my age. Everybody's younger than you. You know, your cop stops you, and he looks like he should be playing Nintendo.
And they've got a TV mounted on the ceiling.
Oh, so well, that's kind of cool.
If it was HGTV or whatever, this is the one where everybody's renovating a $3 million house. They're putting in a $100,000 kitchen. The one that everybody can relate to.
Yeah, we can relate to that.
Yeah. But still, it's something to watch. And they gave me sunglasses.
Oh, nice.
Well, not to take home. I don't want to confuse people. You're not getting a pair of sunglasses when you leave.
Hey, you know,
I don't like the...
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I don't like the bright light. And I told him that. I said, so if I shut my eyes, I'm not going to sleep or anything. And he's like, oh, here. And he gave me sunglasses to wear. So
that reminds me.
You know, they're like medical sunglasses. They're not like, it's not like he gave me glasses from his car. He's like, put these on.
So let me tell you what I found last night on the eBay. It's related.
Okay. You
may not find, nobody out there is probably going to find this hard to believe. They have stuff where you can do your own fillings on eBay.
What an awful idea.
I know. How do you do that?
There was a couple of spots during the cleaning where I winced, let alone drilling out your own teeth and putting epoxy in there.
I don't know. I don't know how one would accomplish that. But I remember years ago, there was the Daily Show. I think it was before Jon Stewart was even on. It might have been Jon Stewart, but they had this guy on. He was from Texas or somewhere. He did his own teeth over, and made his own crowns and so he ground his teeth. This is good breakfast fodder. He ground his teeth down by himself. And invented some kind of composite to make crowns and stuff for his teeth. And they actually look pretty good. I mean, but it was just this weird concoction of stuff that he made up to do it. And if you, you know, it reminds me, in Hannaford, they have temporary fillings you can buy. Like if you lose a filling or something, you can mix up this stuff and stick it in your head and be off and, oh, yeah. Okay.
Look, before you're putting 2-part epoxy you bought at the grocery store in your mouth, I would check for the regular dentist. I don't have dental insurance, and even then, the dentist is not that expensive by comparison.
No.
I guess why people put off going because it's uncomfortable and it's expensive. But you know, it's nice once it's done, and you're like, okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm good to go for a while. But I think I would just have a professional do the filling.
Yeah, I would.
I don't think it's that much of a scam.
Well, my usual trip to the dentist has been because I've eaten popcorn and broken another tooth. And
Stop eating popcorn.
Well, I haven't, but I don't eat as much popcorn, and I'm very careful about it. But I don't know how many crowns I have because of the popcorn.
It's not worth that kind of money.
Well, it's absolutely not. But as a youth, I had a lot of cavities because I wasn't sure about this whole toothbrushing thing being an important thing. And it didn't seem that important to me when I was a kid, and I ate a lot of candy. And
that was you got a European influence too.
Yeah, I think so. So, well, I got religion at some point, and I haven't had a cavity in a dog's age, but my teeth were compromised, so the crowns came into play, and there's nothing more joyous than saying, "Oh yeah, you need a crown." Now they're about $1,200 a throw.
Are they really?
Yeah, I remember when they were cheap. Got a text message here.
In that case, I might try some acrylic caulking or
something. Yeah, well, it's some epoxy. Some of the JB Weld, man.
Gorilla Glue.
Yeah. So we got a text message here. We got a text message here. Says, "Good morning, Pete."
Good morning.
Okay, so we took care of that. that was important.
That's good radio.
Oh, I have to tell you, you missed it yesterday. I have gotten over my. I've been a little wobbly about the lift, the car lift. You know, I was working my way into it. I got over it yesterday, and I got that sucker up in the air 6 feet and prance around underneath that car like I own it, which I do. And
so you're maintaining situational awareness.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. You know what I do is I get everything where it should be. I lift the car about a foot or two, double check it, and then put it up the rest of the way. Make sure it's well. But it's you know, the thing with it, and it's hard for people who have not seen this kind of a lift. There's a bar that goes completely underneath the whole car. So even if I messed up some of the mounting points, that bar underneath the car is kind of like a major security blanket. I realized that yesterday as I was standing underneath it. I said, "Well, yeah, there's less." I'm not tempting the fates. Believe when it comes to electrical work and that lift, you know, I'm going to be extremely conservative. So, hey, we got a phone call, Pete.
Neat.
Yes, sir. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey. Good morning.
Hi.
Is there my water tank, hot water heater failed finally?
Oh boy!
So, is there anything special I need to do to my geyser to hold it over till I hook it back up next summer, or can it just sit there just like that?
If it's disconnected and drained, it's going to be fine. It's no problem.
Perfect.
That was easy.
That was easy. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
All right.
Yeah, we're still. You know, it's unfortunate that Nile is not making the geyser, because that's just such a great device. But
because in this case, that gentleman's water heater failed, but he still has the heat pump. He's going to get the new water heater, hook up the geyser to it in the spring, and
he'll
be back in business. If it was all in one unit and the tank fails, congratulations, you get to throw away your heat pump too.
And and it's a heavier setup because you've got that extra goo-goots on the top of it, and It you know, we talk about wasting resources.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not sure if you had it all in one, and maybe say you bought it 4 or 5, 6 years ago, the tank fails, which would be premature for the tank to fail. But if it happened, could you get another rebate on a new one, or is it a one time? Is it just one to a household or a taxpayer or whatever? That would be an interesting question for the powers that be.
I would think you'd be able to get it for as many of them as everyone you put in. I mean, because like, what if you have an apartment building and you put in four of them? You know,
I don't know. I try not to follow tax law too closely. It scares me.
Yeah, it's not. It's, you know, it's optional.
Yeah. Had you heard this thing about Windows 7 being discontinued or no longer supported?
No, I don't care if Windows 7 is discontinued.
Yeah, I don't either. But you know It isn't just a Microsoft thing. Apple does this, like on iPhones. They only support now new updates are the 6S and newer. So if you had a 6 or a 5S or something like that, you're stuck with the old operating system, which eventually will not work with probably browsers and other things. So, and I found that with my iPad, I no longer can load some websites will no longer load onto that iPad, which I got from you, Pete.
Yeah, but that was years ago.
Yeah. Okay.
That was years ago.
Yeah. You're not warrantying it.
You got to upgrade. No, I'm not warrantying it. You got 40 days or 500 miles. Okay, and after that, you take it to your guy.
Okay.
Take it to your guy after that. It's your responsibility at some point, you know. Yeah. Oh, speaking of cars, I don't know if anybody saw, but on the website we got a nice low cost one. Everybody always likes to know about the low cost cars. We got a 2007 Nissan Altima hybrid with 197K, $38.99 plus tax and title.
And
that's the Nissan Altima hybrid is a licensed clone of the Toyota Camry hybrid. And in fact, a lot of the parts for the hybrid drivetrain say Toyota on them.
Yeah.
So it's like you're getting Toyota quality for a Nissan price. You can't beat that.
And you are getting the same hybrid battery warranty that we give for Toyotas, which is 6 months full.
Yes.
And then limited after that. There'll be a small charge if you needed your battery needed some love.
Which is a good deal, because that battery, if it does need to be rebuilt, is a pain in the butt to get out.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yeah. Leave that to the professionals or us.
Yeah. I had a guy I rebuilt the battery for this week, and he had a car he got. Maybe it was given to him. I don't know. It sat out in a field for a year or something, and I rebuilt the battery, which needed a lot of work, but I didn't. I just charged him my regular price. I should have charged more, but I was being nice. And he didn't bring the car. He just brought the battery. And they put it together. They couldn't get it to run. So he brought it up yesterday. And I'm not quite sure what they didn't do right, but I just put the safety interlock in, hooked up the battery, 12-volt battery, and the car started running. He had it on a flatbed truck and started right up. I mean, he was here for about 3 minutes. And he traveled a distance to get here. But, you know, that's, I guess, the difference between the knowing – I explained to him everything he needed to do, but apparently something didn't connect. I don't know what they did wrong, because I just did what I normally do and started right up and ran good.
Yeah, maybe something. I was just going to say, maybe something wasn't in all the interlock, might not have been in all the way, or maybe the 12 volt was a little bit loose.
I'm thinking I had explained the interlock to him about four times between when he dropped off the battery, when he picked it up, and somebody else was with him, and he just didn't quite, I think, get there. So but that car was kind of funky. It's gonna, you know, we clean a lot of cars. We sometimes see cars that are kind of need a lot of cleaning. This car really needed a lot of cleaning inside and out. It wasn't moldy, but it was dirty. But
I don't get that. It's like, you know, even if you just clean it once a year, you know,
yeah,
run a vacuum through it.
Yeah,
you got nothing to do, just do it.
It doesn't take long. And you know, maybe get we like to use disposable disinfectant wipes, especially considering some of the things we might get into, like in cup holders. Sometimes there's gelled things in there that, but they do a good job, and they're, you know, as opposed to using paper towels and a spray thing, which we also use, the wipes are convenient, and they are disinfectant, which makes me feel a little bit better about some of the things we get into.
We probably got the most disinfected hands in the state at this point.
Well, you know, we do. And I think a lot of Maria, if she gets into a car to clean it, will be there usually over a day. And she is meticulous about getting into the nooks and crannies. And she gets this from her mother. My wife is a real cleaning person. And I didn't say fanatic. Maria is as well, and she's got the Q-tips, and she does a good job. We got a text message here, Pete. The geyser is 10 years old. Any maintenance I should do? No. Okay, back to our conversation. Now, really, the geyser, there really isn't anything. You might disconnect it from the tank if it's hooked into the bottom of the tank. You might shut the water off to the tank and flush the tank, just so there's no, because sometimes you get crud building up the bottom of the tank. That's a typical thing you would do with any water heater, is flush it every once in a while, because if it's drawing off the bottom of the tank, that might get into the unit. If you find that there's a lot of crud there, you might consider flushing the geyser with a garden hose or something, just to see if there's any debris in it. But other than that, no, you just plug it in and let her rip, and just keep it running until it doesn't go anymore. But they do last a very long time. It's a very long-lived device, as Pete said.
Yeah.
You know, mine, God, how old is mine?
Very.
I put it in, I think, in 2004. So that's 16 years ago. Mine is the precursor to the geyser, the Nilotherm. It's basically the same device in a different case, a little different engineering. And it just
the unit's actually from like 2001, isn't it?
It was a little later than that, maybe 03 or 04 they started making them here in Maine. The earlier ones were made by a company called E-Tech, which were very similar to the geyser. They just were a good design. There were a few fluky things that they did on the Nilotherms that they undid in the geyser. The big one with the geyser was they made all the wiring hand-wired, so it just is much more serviceable. And that's a big plus. So
and the voltage.
Well, yeah, they had two. They had one that ran directly off the water heater, and then they had one that you could just plug into a regular outlet. The ones that plug into regular outlet, I thought were a really great thing. And I just hopefully someday they'll make them again. So all I got to say about that, Pete. I think we're just about out of time here. You're around today till 3, right? 3 or 4?
I'm around at least until 3, but I'll stay till 4 or 5. I got nothing to do. So.
Okay, and we got a lot of nice Priuses out there.
Everybody wants Priuses with miles under 200. I got nothing, but I got like one that's over 200 right now. All the others are under, and now nobody's coming in.
Okay, well, you got them, and and they're there, and they're all ready to roll. You can take them out, drive around, and honk at people. On our,
I'm taking them for a ride with speed, and then you bring them back, and the police will never know.
Yeah, that's right. And even the Nissan Altima. And of course, we still have the ambulance. We have somebody coming up from Portland today to look at the ambulance. So,
he sounds very interested.
Good. Yeah,
that's good.
Okay. Well, Pete, I'll see you in a little while.
Okay. Don't
okay.
threaten me.
Thanks. Thanks for calling in. See you soon.
All right.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. And we're just about out of time. So as we end the first radio program of the new year, the new decade, made it to 2020. Man, I never thought I'd be around for that. We will see you next week, same time, same place. And I think if I ask nicely, Mr. Sinatra will come in and sing us right out. Take care now. Happy New Year.